Ernest Hemingway honed his legendary writing style at the Kansas City Star, so all things Hemingway are always of interest here at Up to Date. That leads us to a new film that's just opening, Papa, Hemingway in Cuba, which holds the distinction of being the first Hollywood production to shoot on the island since 1959. The film depicts the real-life story of Hemingway befriending a journalist who idolizes the great writer. Joining us now to talk about the film are Bob Yari. He's the film's director, and Bob, thanks for taking some time.
Well, thank you.
Mariel Hemingway is also with us. She's the granddaughter of Ernest Hemingway and has a cameo appearance in the film. Mariel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Also with us is Steve Paul. He's a Hemingway scholar and the former editorial page editor for the aforementioned Kansas City Star. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
Bob, what's the fascination with Hemingway after so many years? I mean, he's been gone from us since 1961, and that was a very long time ago.
Well, you know, I think he's a iconic character that never fades. I think he's still revered, and especially in Cuba. The interest for me was really this story, I think for the first time, gives us a real personal insight into the man behind the iconic image. It's a very intimate look at some of the demons he suffered with and some of the issues that haunted him and are an issue that continued in his family.
Right.
And Mariel actually did a wonderful documentary about it. And on top of that, I think it's a really interesting, maybe just a coincidence, but, you know, Hemingway was very, very germane to the revolution, as we can see in this movie. And so he was part of the breakup. He left Cuba for the first time after 20 years because of the revolution. And then, in a way, he's kind of coming back and acting as a bridge between the countries as this embargo hopefully is being brought down.
Right.
So I think it's very timely. We're very lucky, actually, that we've coincided with this opening of relations between the two countries. It's long overdue, and we're very thankful for it.
Steve Paul, why the fascination, the continuing fascination with all things Hemingway?
Well, you know, I come from obviously a different perspective, but from, you know, as a giant of American literature who's been in and out of favor, it always continues to amaze me how many movies are made about Hemingway lately, how many books are still written about Hemingway and including Hemingway, and how his books are still read over and over again and remain alive for many of us who are, you know, serious students of the man, and for those who are coming to him in a new way. I know the opening of relations with Cuba will just kind of enhance that relationship, I have no doubt, and you know, I'm happy to see it. You know, he's a very complicated man and very multidimensional, and certainly this movie shows a, you know, one of the darker periods of his life.
You know, Mariel, you've built your own life and your own career, but when people hear your last name, what kinds of reactions do you get?
Well, I mean, even today, there's still an awe to you know, bringing up the name Hemingway. People are still fascinated. I think that regardless of whether you're a historian of his work, people know the name Hemingway. There's some sort of lore about how he lived his life. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. So people just, you know, they're fascinated, especially maybe not as much in this country, but especially in Europe and incredibly so in Cuba. They still really value that the way that he wrote and the impact that he had on the world.
Mary, do you think that a new generation is latching onto his work, or has time taken a toll on your grandfather's stature in some way?
I think there was a time in the not so distant past where he was actually kind of during a time when women's lib was sort of new and people were saying that he was, you know, he was just such a macho kind of man, But the truth is, I think now there's sort of a resurgence of understanding his writing from a different perspective. I mean, we have to understand that he wrote in a totally different time, but he, if you really understand the writing, and Paul, you can probably speak to this well, is that he was, you know, he understood women and relationships and nature, and there was a deeper understanding of who he was and how he wrote that was so beyond the persona.
Like you mentioned the, you know, going out of favor during the rise of, let's say, women's liberation, but it's really interesting to have seen over the years, especially in the 80s, as feminists in academia began to rediscover Hemingway, partly through the Garden of Eden, the book that was very much involved in gender bending, bisexuality, and raised those issues that caused a whole new generation of scholars to go back and take a look and say, oh, wait a minute, Hemingway is not the macho man we thought he was. There's a lot more going on in his work, really from the beginning. And so that whole new generation kind of rediscovered and has really accelerated Hemingway scholarship, at least in academia and in some of the circles that I run in.
We're talking about the new film, Papa, Hemingway in Cuba, which opens this weekend here in town. Bob Yari, how did you get permission to make this film in Cuba and make it the first Hollywood film made there since 1959? There must be quite a story behind that.
There is, and it was quite difficult. Initially, you know, we were turned down. And the embargo is, you know, very clear and very strict on being able to shoot a movie there. The only exception was news gathering, journalism, and a documentary. So after we were turned down, we spent about 2 years lobbying the State Department and the Treasury Department, OFAC, to give us a special license. And really, ultimately, how we were able to convince them, other than letters from senators and meetings, and was really to promote the idea that this, for example, like a film like Lincoln, is a docudrama and based on a true story. We're recreating reality. We're doing it in the places that they occurred. And luckily, we finally were able to convince them to give us that permission. Before this opening was happening, and now films are streaming down there, and we're very happy about that. We're very happy that things are opening up.
You actually got permission then before the opening?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What was the process of filming down there? I mean, is it different from filming anywhere else?
You know, it truly is. I think the isolation that the island has experienced over these years, they have a very vibrant film community of their own, but it has a very different style. In particular, they're very relaxed about the pace of work. I think just the nature of communism is that, you know, your reward is the same whether you work hard or you work slow. So there's a very relaxed attitude. And there was a real clash between the pace of a Hollywood film, which sometimes shoots 14 hours a day, and that kind of relaxed filmmaking. But, you know, the Cubans are such industrious people. They make so much out of so little, like the cars they're driving on the mm-hmm. streets today, that they really stepped up and they just met with our pace and they made it happen. They're really a wonderful people and very, very talented, very artistic.
Bob, were the scripts subject to government censorship?
You know, I always worried about that. I made a film in China called Painted Veil, and we hit tremendous censorship, both in script form and final film. So I was expecting that here, and they did require to look at our script. But, you know, surprisingly, and I attribute this to basically the love of the Cuban people for anything, any topic Hemingway, they really did not edit a word. They didn't ask us to change anything. They gave us full support, and there was absolutely no censorship.
Mariel Hemingway, you actually have a cameo in this film. How did that come about, and why did you want to be a part of it?
I'm still wondering. No. I was like, who am I playing? Well, Bob and I were friends from here in the States, and He asked if I'd like to come down, and I did really. I have such a love and affection for Cuba. It's a wonderful place, and like Bob was saying, the people are just, they make so much of so little, and they're just industrious people, and they're kind, and they're smart, and they're, you know, they have, you know, their technology is not what we have, and they just do so much. So I was just excited to get down there again, and you know, and I was in the dining room scene. I'm just not going to say who I was. You won't. I don't know.
I gather you had been to your grandfather's home down there before in Cuba, Mariel. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. I had been there several times. I made a documentary down there about, actually two. I did Hemingway's food with the Food Network, and then I did another just on him, you know, generically, which mm-hmm. was part of a bigger documentary about my grandfather. So I had been there several times, and but this was just a wonderful and unique experience because the house is so special. I mean, people who live here in the States and they've been to Key West, or anybody who's been to Key West, they're always like, oh, it's an amazing house. But when you see the Cuba house, because he really spent far more time in Cuba than he did in most any other place that he had homes in, and you can see how special it was to him. And the fact that Bob was able to film actually in the house, because it's a museum, is just extraordinary, and it makes the story so real and so powerful. It's a beautiful place.
Steve Paul, you've been to the house in Cuba. You have seen the film. What kind of glimpse does this film provide into Hemingway's Cuban world?
Yeah, I mean, it was great to see the house again. I have to say, maybe it affirms my experience of shooting video inside the Finca Vahia, which I thought was very special at the time a few years ago. So it was great to see the house. It was great to see the Cuban scenes. Bob, I want to say I was glad to hear you say a few minutes ago that you sold this idea on the fact that it was based on a true story. I was a little taken aback when the movie begins and declares that it is a true story, because I just happen to feel like there's some liberties taken with the truth. And, you know, we can get into those details if you want. But, you know, there is truth in the movie. It's just not all true. You know, it's certainly true. And I think Adrian Sparks, as Hemingway, did a really fabulous job in kind of seeing that breakdown happen. But some of the events that occurred, I think Danny Petty-Clerk may have overstated his friendship with Mary and Ernest, and may have overstated his presence at some of the events that were depicted.
I knew Denny. I grew up with him. Mm-hmm. He really did have a very close relationship.
Could you
with
answer? And maybe then answer this question, Mary, if you would. I was curious. I went back and reread Mary Hemingway's book. She never mentions the guy, and she mentions incidents that occur. He's not there. The dumping of the guns in the for one, and I'm just curious about why she left him out if he was such a great friend.
Well, he was at all the parties in Sun Valley. You know, they mm-hmm. did birthday parties every single year in Sun Valley, and he was always there. He was very close with Mary until mm-hmm. her death. Maybe because of the political situation and because mm-hmm. it was a delicate topic, then they weren't able, you know, she just felt that it wasn't appropriate to talk about it. But, you know, maybe it's exaggerated, but maybe mm-hmm. it's not. I tend to think that Denny was very close with Mary till mm-hmm. her death. Mm-hmm.
Bob Yari, weigh in here and tell us about the truthfulness here, and give us the Nichols version of what the plot line is here, Bob.
Well, the plot line is primarily about, you know, this young reporter's view into Hemingway's declining years and his trials and tribulations with you know, with the mental illness and depression that he dealt with that was undiagnosed at that time, and yet the backdrop is the Cuban Revolution and his kind of peripheral involvement in that. And Stephen, when I read the script, I had your same reaction. Mm-hmm. I said, well, this looks like a lot of it has some liberty taken in it. And I never spoke to Denny, unfortunately. He had passed away before I acquired the rights. But I spoke to his widow, and, you know, she said that Denny had claimed that he was very, very true to everything he had seen and heard. So the only research I can do, because obviously many of the moments are very personal, they're, I mean, obviously the historical events you can verify, but one of the things that I found was very telling was the recent release of the FBI files. And, you know, there's volumes of Hemingway in their files. And, you know, Hotchner, who was his biographer, himself said that Hemingway, who was his dear friend, was becoming paranoid during the end of his life, and the FBI, he claimed the FBI was after him, and the government was after him. And then recently he just put out a new book after seeing these FBI files, and he said, look, I was wrong. They were after him.
Yeah.
He was not paranoid. There was some rationale to what he was saying at that time. And if you really scour those files, you see a lot of tidbits of this story.
Yeah, no, and I agree. There are tidbits of, as I said, I think there are tidbits of truth. I had some communication this week with Raul Villarreal, whose father was the majordomo of the Finca Vigía, whose memories are a little bit different, in some of this regard, especially regarding Hemingway's interest in the revolution and, you know, how far he might have gone. I don't believe the scene where Hemingway takes Eddie or Denny to watch the shootout at the Capitol. I mean, I just think that's entirely made up.
Well, in any event, I have a clip from the movie here where Ed Meyers, played by Giovanni Ribisi, is sitting on the beach with Ernest Hemingway. Let's take a listen.
No, I was just an ignorant bum who read a lot of libraries to stay out of the rain. Mostly day labor jobs and flop houses. And then after years of hustling, I finally managed to weasel my way into a job on the sports desk at a local paper in Northern California, which was a dream. It's just the only problem was I didn't know how to write. I mean, I could read okay, but to actually type out sentences and spelling and punctuation, I didn't know anything.
The newspaper businesses could be a problem.
Yeah, the city editor found it particularly amusing when I spelt the word maybe, M-A-B-E.
Ooh.
He called me a liar and then he fired me.
So what did you do?
Well, I knew that I wanted to be a writer. And the only thing I could do was go and beg for my job back. So after about 3 days of begging, he finally said, okay, fine, you have 2 weeks, no pay. Maybe you can learn to be a writer. So I worked at the paper during the day, and then at night I stayed typing over your short stories. I copied them word for word. It taught me how to type. It taught me the English language. It taught me spelling and grammar and how to write dialogue. It taught me how to see.
Smart.
Changed my life.
That's from Papa Hemingway in Cuba. And Bob Yari, I guess it's only fair to point out that the reviews have been a little bit on the rough side. Do you want to offer a counter to that?
Yeah, I've been surprised by it, especially in light of the fact that we've done probably 30 to 40 word of mouth screenings, and we do a little bit of a exit interview after these, and the audience response has just been overwhelmingly positive. So yeah, I've been a little surprised. There's very few that are out so far, but they have been disappointingly negative. I can't really answer that. Everyone has an opinion.
Right.
I think this is a film that's suited for a slightly older, mature audience. It's very nuanced. It's about interpersonal relationships, and it doesn't have the pace and feel of a big movie. It's a small independent movie about a very personal side of an icon.
Muriel, just to wrap things up here, does your family still tell stories about him, or is that sort of, you know, been there, done that?
It's very interesting that you say that, because that you ask that, because my family, my father, I think because of his father taking his own life, he didn't tell a ton of stories. There were stories that were kind of the bigger stories, but the day-to-day stuff, he didn't talk about a lot. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that my grandfather was, you know, he wasn't like a all-American dad, you know. I think he had a very different way of raising his boys, and I don't know that he was the most close person. I think he was a difficult man to get close to in some ways. So we didn't have a lot of stories. And I also think that people that suffer, you know, are left behind after suicide really are challenged with their feelings, especially back when you didn't talk about it, you know?
The film is Papa Hemingway in Cuba. It opens up this weekend in Kansas City. That was just the voice of Mariel Hemingway. She's the granddaughter of Ernest Hemingway. Mariel, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Bob Yari is the film's director. Bob, good luck with the film.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
And Steve Paul, a Hemingway scholar, former editorial page editor for the Kansas City Star. Steve, always good to have you here.
Thanks to you, and thanks to Bob and Mariel.